south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, back in the saddle again after another really cool seminar. Great group, really great group. Small group, so we bonded really well. And with those smaller groups, you know, you become friends with those people for life. As opposed to the larger groups, and for me, larger groups are 25 to 35 people. Sometimes that can really get out of hand. Because, you know, with those larger groups, even though you're together a week, you don't get a lot of face time with every individual. But with small groups, we're up front, close and personal all the time. Because, you know, the seminars are not just about having a lecture in the day and having boots on the ground in the afternoon or whatever. It goes more or less like this. We'll start out having breakfast together at something like 7 o'clock. We have lunch and dinner together, too, and then we're hanging out somewhere, restaurant, hotel, cigar bar, beachfront, poolside, whatever, till 10 or 12 at night. So it's never just a 9-to-5 thing. We end up spending something like 14 to 18 hours together most every day. Anyway, it was really a great group, and already the comments and evaluations are coming in. Yep, they usually start trickling in a couple of days after the seminar. And here's the first one that just arrived. No names here. To Johnny and crew, the week was amazing. Thank you. My very high expectations were met. And you are all just really great people. And I appreciate the other attendees and all the contacts we made, too. Then she says to my seminar logistics lady, Rita, I'll send you a separate email tonight communicating about my return next week. Then she signs off with her name and says, with gratitude. So anyway, another great seminar week, and I'm back in the saddle here again. Now, I have to admit, when talking to some of the attendees one-on-one, the subject of guns came up quite a few times. Of course, everyone knows there are guns throughout Latin America, but the question is, can gringos and expats own them? What are the rules and regs, et cetera, et cetera? Well, let me first qualify this by saying, up in the States, I had quite a few guns. Not an arsenal by any means, but I had a piece of farm property north of Chicago, I think it was 20 acres, with a house and a barn on it, a little river running through it. So I had my own place for me and my buddies to practice and shoot. Oh, and a long time ago, before I even shot a pistol, I had shot some rifles and shotguns before. I went duck and goose hunting a few times, didn't hit anything, which is probably for the best. But before I bought and shot a pistol, I took some gun training classes given by the local gun and sports shop, which is definitely the way to go. I don't think anyone should own a gun until after they've taken some classes. Anyway, over the years, I've gotten so many emails about guns, firearms, what you can own, what you can't, what are the laws and restrictions like for gringos and expats here in Latin America, etc. Well, because there's been so much interest, I actually wrote a 5-page report on it, which I'm thinking about updating in a month or so I'll keep you posted. Of course, all the seminar attendees will get a copy right away, but things have changed a bit since I wrote it, so it will need an update. In the meantime, I'm going to answer some common gun questions and lay some of this gun info on you right now. So first, we're going to talk about Mexico. Why Mexico? Since I don't recommend you invest, live there, or spend too much time there. Well, that doesn't seem to be stopping gringos and expats from piling in. Sure, it's a great place to play if you book a trip to one of those all-inclusives at Cancun or Playa del Carmen, whatever. But to actually live, work, and invest there, man, you gotta be nuts. Not that you can't find places that seem real nice. You have to ask yourself what it's gonna be like 1, 2, 3, 5, 10 years from now. Face the facts. It's not getting better, only worse. It never has gotten better in Mexico in the last 25 years. Every single year, it's worse. We're talking about property crimes, assaults, misdemeanors, extortion, and kidnappings here. And isn't it funny? Mexico, which has some of the toughest gun laws in the world, is breaking records for crimes, including homicides this year. However, if you check the Mexican laws, you'll find it's possible for Mexican citizens and gringos and expats to own a piece or two. But the reality? Well, I know many gringos and expats living in Mexico, not a single one of them has a gun. Though nearly every one of them wishes he had one or two, or at least had the option to get one. I know what you're thinking. Johnny just said, or at least I think he said, I can own a gun if I'm in Mexico. Well, technically, yes, but it's a near impossibility because of the bureaucracy involved. First off, did you know that there's only one gun store in all of Mexico? One. And it's in Mexico City. So first of all, in order to get a gun, you have to go to Mexico City. And Mexico is a huge country. So, for example, if you're living in the Yucatan, in Cancun or Tulum, or even Tijuana, it's a couple of days' ride by car to Mexico City. And the ride, and believe me, you don't want to drive at night, is dangerous. So you're thinking, well, I'll fly there. Great. Fly to Mexico City, do all the paperwork and whatever it takes, get your gun and fly back to your townhouse in Cancun. Simple enough, right? Wrong. Because you can't fly on a plane with the gun. Not even in the stowed luggage. Not that it's impossible, but you'll have to go to 4 or 5 other government offices and get 6 or 7 documents signed by different department heads to get the gun in the first place, and then you'll have to go through that same mess to get permission to put it on a plane. Let's put it this way, you'll be spending a couple of weeks in Mexico City no matter what. In other words, it ain't gonna happen. In fact, I don't know of anyone who's ever been able to do it. That's not to say I don't know gringos and expats in Mexico with a gun, but they're all holding illegally. So then what are your legal options? Well, if you can get a gun at the store in Mexico City, you'll have to drive back to Cancun or whatever town you live in. And like I said, it's a dangerous drive. And believe me, if you get pulled over by one of the corrupt Mexican cops and he finds a gun in your car, and that's, by the way, the first thing he's going to ask when you roll down your window, ¿Porta arma, señor? He'll say. That's the question. Are you carrying a gun? Porta means are you carrying, and arma is gun. And when you say yes, and you better say yes, and show it to him and the paperwork, you think that's going to be the end of it? He's just going to let you go? Remember, Mexico's got some of the most corrupt cops in the world. Get ready to pull out some green or give up the gun. Get the picture? But let's go back a second to that only gun shop in all of Mexico. It's behind a fortress-like wall on a heavily guarded military base, too. And to get in the place, it's called the Directorate of Arms and Munitions Sales. Customers must undergo months of background checks, and 6 federal documents are required. You got that? 6 documents, 6 different departments, a couple of hours wait in each line. You're talking about at least 2 weeks sitting around in Mexico City waiting for all that stuff to come through. And for each of those steps, you'll have to pay a tramitador, a person to handle your paperwork. So you better have a lot of time and a lot of money, because you're going to be staying in a hotel, right? By the way, like the Second Amendment in the U.S., Mexico's Constitution guarantees the right to bear arms. Hey, ask any narco or adolescent kid with a neck tattoo. They're all packing. The fact is, the Mexican government bureaucracy has made it so difficult for anyone to get a gun. They only issue around 35 to 40 firearms to civilians each day. Now, that might sound like a lot, but that's for the whole country. Meanwhile, the FBI, yes, we're talking about the U.S. FBI, estimates that 580 guns are smuggled into Mexico from the U.S. every day. So do the math. There are 15 times as many illegal guns entering Mexico from the U.S. as there are legal guns sold in the whole country each day. So it doesn't matter if you're talking about a day, week, month, or year. 15 times as many illegal guns are entering Mexico from the U.S. as are sold legally there. There's something really up about that. The real paradox is that Mexico has unprecedented levels of gun violence in a country where it's almost impossible for a normal person to get a gun and defend himself with it legally. Oh, and get this, according to the ATF, you know, the U.S. Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, more than 70% of guns recovered by Mexican law enforcement officials. Yeah, right, Mexican law enforcement. Talk about oxymorons. Emphasis on the moron. Anyway, more than 70% of all guns recovered by Mexican law enforcement officials from 2011 to 2016 were originally purchased legally from gun dealers in the U.S. and somehow made their way to Mexico. Meanwhile, you and I couldn't sneak a roach through the Mexican-U.S. border without getting caught. By the way, did you ever drive through the U.S.-Mexican border? Or have you maybe only seen it on TV? It's a trip. They've got drug and bomb-sniffing dogs all over the place. Meanwhile, according to the FBI, 580 guns a day slip through that border. Meanwhile, Trump's an inhumane jerk for trying to put up a wall. Don't get me started. So then what does it take for a civilian, like a gringo or expat who's got his residency, for example, to actually get a gun in Mexico, since technically it's legal? Well, first of all, you must have an apostilled birth certificate. No problem. You need that for residency. That should be easy to get. And number two, this is the big stumbling block for gringos and expats. You must show proof that you're employed. So basically, you can't have a legal gun in Mexico unless you have a job. And, you know, collecting a pension or Social Security or living in Guadalajara off the rent of some apartment buildings you have in Texas, that does not qualify you as an employed person. And of course, you'll have to prove you have no criminal record. So wherever you're living in Mexico, you'll have to go out to the police station and get a document that's called Antecedentes Penales. It's a local, departmental, or state background check. Cost you maybe $5 or $10. Plus, if you're an American citizen, you'll have to get that famous FBI background check, which involves getting fingerprints done, and it'll cost around $100. Of course, you'll have to be a permanent resident of Mexico. Then you'll have to go from line to line, building to building, and that'll take a couple of days to a week or so. Of course, if you have a lawyer with you, you might be able to do it in one day. Question is, are you going to fly your lawyer to Mexico City with you and pay his expenses? Oh, and get this, current Mexican law allows citizens one handgun and up to 9 rifles, but they have to prove they're a member of a shooting or hunting club. So that's another thing you'll have to do, join a shooting or hunting club. Worse yet, or crazier yet, if you, by chance, are able to get a permit to buy a gun, you can't carry that gun in public. That requires its own separate permit and a whole different process. That's equally idiotic, redundant, time-wasting, and retarded. Oh, I forgot, you're not supposed to say the R word. Oops. Anyway, as a result of this lengthy, stupid, moronic, retarded process, all in the sincere effort of making sure firearms end up in the hands of, quote, moral and responsible people only. At least that's what the Mexican gun store clerks will tell you. By the way, everyone working there is wearing a military uniform and carries some rank in the Mexican military, one of the most corrupt organizations in the world. But you knew that already, right? So bottom line, technically, you're allowed to get a gun if you're a gringo or expat with permanent residency. But you shouldn't expect for it to actually come to pass. However, you can go to any bar in Tijuana or Juarez, ask the bartender, flash some cash, and you'll be hooked up with the appropriate criminal within the hour. So that's the situation in Mexico. Meanwhile, they're in the top 10 in gun violence and homicides in the world. Now, as for the rest of Latin America, there are only two other countries where it's impossible for gringos, expats, even citizens born there to get a gun. Two guesses, Cuba and Venezuela. Meanwhile, in Brazil, a country who in 2018 had the most murders in the world. They had something like 65,000 murders that year. Turns out more than 70% of those involved firearms. Question is, were the guns used in those homicides legal or not? Well, wouldn't you know it, in 2003, 17 years ago now, a law was passed there that effectively banned civilians from purchasing any guns at all. Although the laws on the books said anyone could have a gun if they met certain requirements, there was one particular statement on the forms you had to fill out that disqualified almost everyone. And that statement said, please provide your reason for needing a gun. If you said your neighborhood was unsafe or you were afraid or you needed self-protection, those were not good enough reasons. However, if you said you worked as a security guard or you owned a business that dealt with a lot of cash, etc., then you could get a gun. But that question pretty much disqualified every gringo and expat living in Brazil. Because gringos and expats are not security guards and they don't have businesses with a lot of employees that deal in cash. But, however, since gun crime is so rampant in Brazil, just 1 year ago, the new president Bolsonaro got into office and, well, surprise, surprise, he actually fulfilled one of his campaign promises. What did he do? Well, he had that question removed from the application process to get a gun. So since about a year ago, firearms in Brazil are available through an exemption made by the president to urban residents of states with a homicide rate of 10 per 100,000 residents or more. And that, by the way, includes all Brazilian cities. And as for rural residents in Brazil, all they have to do is put on the form that they have difficulty accessing help from the police, then they too will qualify for a gun permit. But get this, I'm looking at the registration form right now, and it's translated into English from Portuguese. It says, after you've filled out the forms, and received your firearm registration and have bought your weapon, which can take days or months. It even says that right on the form. You must then fill out a request for a temporary transportation permit in order to bring the firearm to your home. Without this authorization, it says, you may be arrested for illegally carrying a weapon, even if you are transporting your own new legally purchased weapon from the store to your home. Then it says you must take this request that has been signed and authorized to the nearest federal police station along with the following documents. Original copies of all the documents in the gun store, original copies of the registration certificate, a copy of your proof of residence, and then it says you must go back to the weapons store with the following documents. Your firearm registration certificate, the temporary authorization to transport the firearm to your home that you just received from the federal police. Then it says you are now permitted to transport the firearm from the weapons store to your home, but don't forget to buy ammunition as well and carry it along to your home with this permit, because you're not allowed to carry ammunition from the gun store to your home without that permit as well. By the way, that transportation permission slip is only good for that day. Then it says, you must transport the gun unloaded and inside a backpack or appropriate bag, whatever that is, and in the open. In other words, not in your glove compartment, under the seat, or in the trunk. Or it says you could be arrested for illegally transporting weapons. After all that, you still thinking about living in Brazil? All right, so you probably know there are 20 Latin American countries. More or less anyway, because often Puerto Rico's included. Because, you know, they think they're a country. Out of those 20 countries, there are four where you're going to have an awful hard time getting a weapon legally. That would be Mexico, Cuba, Venezuela, and Brazil. Of course, you can see by the Mexico and Brazil examples and the time it takes to get a permit, most gringos and expats don't even bother. Then again, in the other 16 Latin American countries, as long as you've got a lawyer, you've got your permanent residency, and you're not a felon, you can own firearms legally. I know many gringos and expats who do. I own legal firearms in Latin America myself. The fact is, I've had them in two countries, both Guatemala and Costa Rica. Now, as far as how to go about doing it, well, you just go to any gun store with your lawyer. That's my recommendation. He'll help you fill out all the paperwork. And by the way, on most all applications, you'll need a fiador or professional reference. We're talking about a local citizen professional who's a character reference for you. That would be your lawyer. By the way, your lawyer will pick up those antecedentes penales for you. That's the local police report. So, in most cases, once you've walked into the gun store, you'll have the gun that you bought that day in your hand within 2 or 3 weeks. Of course, I know a lot of people listening to this show are thinking, I hate guns. I don't even want to be near one. I mean, that's the attitude of so many Americans, right? And that's your privilege. But I find most all of the time when you sit down with a person like that and you get into a gun discussion, for them, it's a moral question. Some people just have that negative, knee-jerk reaction. And I find they really don't want to hear the facts and the truths about gun ownership and the real, non-skewed crime statistics. And even when you lay out the facts and show them the proof, they ignore the stats, they don't want to believe them, or just call it fake news. But facts are facts, and the truth is the truth, even if you don't want to believe it. Although these days, it seems, especially on the internet, people have their own versions of the truth and what they want to believe, especially when it comes to hot-button issues like immigration, Muslims, Islam, terrorism, gender identity, sexual harassment, socialism, national health care, Me Too, LGBT stuff, millennials, Bitcoin, cryptos, snowflakes, psychotropic drugs, vaccines, etc., etc. And to think that none of that stuff existed, or at least it was on no one's agenda when I was a kid. But I digress as usual, because today we're talking about facts and truths concerning guns and violence. So let's get into it. Did you know that in the United States in 2018, there were approximately 30,000 gun-related deaths? That's with a population of around 325 million in the States. So when you look at the math, that's 0.009% of the population. Basically, that's less than 1/1,000th of a percent, which, mathematically speaking, is statistically insignificant. I know, insignificant except for the person or persons who actually got killed. Now, in this discussion, here's where I lose the anti-gun people. It's when I get into the numbers. They don't want to believe it. But just follow me here. 65% of those 30,000 were death by suicide. And you know, there are 100 ways to kill yourself if you really want to. When you're super depressed and you get to that point where there's a will, there's a weapon. In other words, strict gun laws are not going to prevent that 65% from doing themselves in. Then you've got 15% of those 30,000 gun deaths attributed to law enforcement shootouts. You know, in the line of duty, justified homicide, if you believe that. And you got 17% of that 30,000 firearm deaths a year attributed specifically to gang-on-gang, criminal-in-the-hood violence. Now, you could go as far as to say a lot of those guys are mentally ill, so that's a component too. Now, you don't have to agree with that, but if you think that people who make a living on the streets threatening people and shooting each other aren't sociopaths or aren't mentally ill, you and I didn't grow up in the same world. But back to the numbers. You have 3% of those 30,000 gun deaths in the U.S. in 2018 attributed to accidental discharge, with way more than half of those weapons confiscated in accidental discharge deaths attributed to unregistered, therefore illegal weapons. You've all heard the stories. A 6-year-old kid finds a loaded gun in the house next to Uncle Leon's crack pipe. So anyway, when you factor out all those percentages, there weren't actually 30,000 gun deaths in the U.S. that could have been prevented by making firearms illegal, but closer to 5,000. Now, here's what you didn't know. In 2018, 10% of all those firearm deaths were, guess where? In that toddling town, Chicago. Yep, Obama's old stomping grounds, where he was senator. Man, did he do great things for that city, though not a single person can remember just what they were. So anyway, Chicago accounts for about 10% of the homicides in 2018. The actual number of homicides, 480. Next in line after Chicago, Baltimore with 340. That's 6.7% of the national total. Number three on the list, no surprise, Detroit, with 333 gun-related homicides in 2018. That's 6.5% of the U.S. total. Number four, Washington, D.C., 119 homicides. That's 2.3% of the gun homicide total in 2018. So when you look at the numbers, strictly at the numbers, the facts, 25% of all homicides in the U.S. occur in just four cities, Chicago, Baltimore, Detroit, and Washington, D.C. And what do all those four cities have in common? The most strict gun laws in all the USA. And you know, coincidentally, those are cities that are all controlled by Democrats. Democrats who just love gun control. And believe me, every last one of them would like to apply extremely strict gun control laws, just exactly like they've done in Chicago, Baltimore, Washington, D.C., and Detroit, because they work so well there, don't they? Oh, and just a little bit more on the statistics thing. If you deduct those four cities from the U.S. gun murder toll, you got around 4,000 gun-related deaths a year, and that averages out to around 75 gun deaths per state. But, you know, that's just an average, and it doesn't work out that way. For example, California, with more than 15 times as many, it's got a lot more people, around 1,200 murders by homicide in 2018. Then you've got a state like Alabama, where there were only 2 homicides in 2018. And that's a gun-packing state. Practically everyone with a garage, a pickup truck, a Harley, or a double-wide has one or two. So the thing is, when you listen to the political narrative that's coming out of the states and coming out of the media like CNN, etc., why do you think politicians are trying to convince the public that it's a good thing to follow the example of Chicago, Detroit, Baltimore, and Washington, D.C.? Isn't it obvious by now that when you disarm the public, you've got the criminals running the show? Man, I'll tell you, the aggregate national IQ is in the crapper. Wait a minute, I know. Let's put more fluoride in the water. So you've got the public all dumbed down, as well as the media distorting the data. Hey, you don't have to be a genius to see that the four cities with the highest homicide rates have two things in common: thoroughly corrupt politicians and the strictest gun laws. You know, you don't solve a problem by ignoring or not presenting the data. Not only that, people forget history, or they don't care to study it at all. And I do remember a quote from a book I read about World War II when they were interviewing General Tojo from the Japanese Imperial Army. By the way, they executed him in 1948 as a war criminal. They asked him why the Japanese forces never landed infantry in California or Hawaii. Tojo said they didn't do that because they knew that every American family had a gun and every kid a BB gun. They could have landed all right, and it would have been easy. But they figured there'd be an American with a gun behind every blade of grass. So they considered it out of the question. Oh, and here's something my dad told me. When officers or guys who were issued pistols came home from World War II, they were allowed to keep them, bring them home. So you got all these millions of servicemen coming home with their Colt 45 model 1911 semi-automatic service pistols. Nice gun, too, designed over 100 years ago. Oh, and by the way, speaking of Chicago as being so dangerous, you know, I grew up there in the 60s and 70s. And in my little mixed middle and lower middle class white neighborhood, yep, it was lily white as far as the eye could see. A mix of Polish, German, Italian, Irish, but no blacks or Latinos to be seen anywhere, except sprinkled in at the local public schools. But not in my hood, because Chicago was really segregated back then. And you know what? When I was a young kid and adolescent, there was absolutely no real crime in the neighborhood. And I mean none. And I think I know why. Because everyone had a dad in the family. Hey, mom and dad might not have gotten along, but there was always a dad in the family, and there were almost zero divorces. And when someone did get divorced, man, was that big news and gossip. So why am I bringing this up? Well, here's a little story that tells it all. I was an excellent golfer. The golf course was nearby. And when I was 12, I won one of the championships for the city. And one guy, last name was Sharfinski, big brute of a bully, played a round of golf with me, and I beat the pants off him. He was a bully, so he didn't take kindly to a younger, smaller guy beating him in golf. He threw my clubs in the creek. I came home all muddy and crying. I was only 12. My dad called up his dad. You know, even in big Chicago neighborhoods, everyone knows everyone. Or someone who could find out about someone through the grapevine, you know, 3 degrees, not 6 degrees of separation. And within the hour, a car showed up. The dad got out with the kid and beat the crap out of him in front of the whole neighborhood. I know. I probably told that story before in greater detail. But just remember, everyone had a dad at home. And parents didn't want their kids embarrassing them in the neighborhood. Parents kept their kids in line, which is a big reason why there was almost no crime in my old neighborhood. And why these days, with over 50% of the homes not having a man in the house, even in many decent neighborhoods, a certain amount of crime is constant, and the days of leaving your doors unlocked are over. All right, getting towards the end of the show now. Just want to remind you, I've got my newly revised Latin American healthcare report. Go to www.theexpatfiles.com. Just click on the healthcare report link and find out everything you need to know about doctors, clinics, hospitals, insurance plans, and more for expats and gringos in Latin America. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.